This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. Today we're talking about maternal health in Indiana. The state is ranked near the bottom of the country on pregnancy-related deaths, and we have a panel of health experts and advocates to talk about why that is and what can be done to address it. If you have any questions or comments for the show today, let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. With us now, we have four guests: Rima Shahid, Executive Director of Women for Change; Velvet Miller, Project Director for Not One More, Promoting Maternal Health and Preventing Maternal Death; Vanessa Summers, Indiana State Representative for House District 99, and Dr. Virginia Kane, Director and Chief Medical Officer for the Marion County Public Health Department. Welcome. Thank you so much for joining us today. Rima, I want to start with you. Can you tell us about this event that you had recently that delved into this topic, and tell us why it was important to host this event currently?
Yeah, we will. First and foremost, Women for Change is a nonpartisan statewide organization, and our mission is to educate and equip women to create positive change for Hoosiers. We know when we create positive change for women, it not just impacts that one individual woman, but her family and her community. And since September of 2018, we've had a fabulous group of folks, including Dr. Velvet Miller, who's on the call, that bring together a panel of speakers that talk about issues that affect all Hoosiers, which includes the maternal infant mortality that we're dealing with here in the state of Indiana. And so we brought together two legislators, two community experts, and our fabulous moderator, Dr. Velvet Miller, that dealt with this issue because it's important to bring awareness to this issue. A lot of people don't know what Hoosier women are going through, what Hoosier women families are going through. And once they find out, they want to take action to make Indiana a better place, not just today, but for future generations.
Mm-hmm. And Velvet, can you tell us about the Not One More Project? What is that all about?
The Not One More Project has been evolved out of concern from me and several others about the lack of attention of maternal deaths, and in particular, Black maternal deaths, because we know that 3 to 4 times Black mothers die over the ratio of whites. We said there's something we can do, must do, to say not one more. And so the project evolved into doing whatever we can within the community to promote healthy pregnancy, and doing what we can in the community and with colleagues to prevent maternal mortality. That's Not One More.
Mm-hmm. And did anything specific lead to the creation of this group, or was it just a culmination of noticing this?
Well, I've been asking folk in my previous position at IU School of Medicine, what research is being done? What are the effective strategies to address this disparity and the extremely high rate of Black mothers dying? And there were several faculty that were very interested, and yet I did not find, until I bumped into the organization called Sister Sung and Black Mamas Count. Is that right? And then I decided, well, what can we do in Indianapolis, and in particular throughout the state in Indiana? And with some like-minded folk, we said, we can make a difference. We can start by saying not one more maternal death if we can help it. That's preventable. Fortunately, we've got strong legislators that were in back of us, Senator Breaux, Representative Summers, that said, we will join you in fighting to make this change occur. Dr. Kane, Dr. Box have been extraordinary in helping to move this agenda. But when we say we'd like to talk to the community, both of them jump up without me finishing the question. So I'm tickled about that. Does that help?
Yeah. Well, Vanessa, how much attention do you think issues around maternal health and pregnancy-related deaths get in Indiana? I mean, obviously, we're seeing there's an organization, there's a lot of efforts being made to bring this more to light. But are you seeing any changes happening?
Well, actually, in the last legislative session, I had a piece of legislation that would move the postpartum care for Medicaid, for women on Medicaid, from 60 days to a year. And then President Biden put it in his CARES Act. So as of now, we have women that are post, you know, have a year of postpartum care. Mm-hmm. So that was one of the things that I was trying to do legislatively, is get some money for that. And I didn't have to. In the end, we didn't have to. So we were able. So I'm going to take that as a win.
And do you think that there are certain reasons why this doesn't get as much attention as it does? You know, I mean, luckily you're saying this came out, I guess, maybe on the federal level, but even locally, why there is so much non-information, perhaps?
I just think that it's a time for us to do a better job of getting the information out there in a way that I always say that doesn't scare women to death. Mm-hmm. Because it is it's carrying a baby in this day and age, and especially for women of African American descent or Black and Brown, it's a little harder for them because of all the cultural competency, the cultural differences, and the lack of cultural competency, and the implicit bias that mm-hmm. we have in our medical system. So, you know, that it goes into a whole different story. So,
Right. And Dr. Kane, what challenges do you see in trying to get information to people about maternal health? And, you know, what are some of the ways that that's changing?
So I think it's a number of in terms of the communication. One, it's unfortunate because of poverty. We don't always have women who have access to health care, or the perception that they don't have access to health care because of their poverty level. So I think that's one. I also think a little bit it may be our healthcare system and how it's designed. So a lot of times our healthcare systems are designed to say that if I'm seeing a patient, I'm given so many minutes that I have to have a discussion with that patient. And so once those minutes have rolled by, we call them something called RVUs, relative units. Type of thing, that I get reimbursed for so many minutes I see a patient. And so a lot of our patients are a little bit more complicated. They take a little bit more time. So I may, as a provider, may be rushing, cutting off the conversation because I know I've got to go to my next patient that's scheduled for me, which sometimes can be very frustrating for the patient. And if I'm pregnant, especially if this is a first pregnancy, there are a lot of things I need to know. So we don't always have those systems designed that if I can't get the information from the physician or a midwife or nurse practitioner, is there someone else available to give them that type of education at the time that they want to hear the information? And I shouldn't have to wait till my very next appointment to get that type of information. And so what are those vehicles that we can, whether it's from social media, you know, maybe I have an application on a phone that can help give me some tips, or some site I can be directed to in order to learn more about my pregnancy. I think those are the pieces that are missing for a number of our low income patient populations, along with some of the things that I believe Vanessa identified. We look at what percentage of, for example, Black women get in to prenatal care. And so it's a significant percentage of them that don't get into prenatal care until like the second trimester. And we know that to prevent infant deaths, complications to infant deaths, like low birth weight or premature birth, that we need to start those vitamins early. You know, we should have started in the first trimester to prevent congenital deaths. We also know that there are certain things like even a bladder infection, which you may not have any symptoms, but you may have the infection going on. And unless you screen, you wouldn't know that early. That can also contribute to, you know, low birth weights or premature births that can be associated with complications. And I think the third piece, I'll be real quick, is that, you know, patients want to know why you're doing things to them, why you're doing this screening or why you're doing this test. And we don't always have the time to communicate adequately why we're doing this particular test or why this visit was so important. And so if they don't realize why the visit was so important, they don't have the incentive to say, hey, well, whatever you're doing, I could do that at home. They're not realizing that you may be screening them for some important things like HIV infections or of those nature. So we have taken away the amount of time, I believe, we used to have the opportunity to communicate with our patients compared to the old days.
And so are you saying that it's getting maybe worse than in some aspects, the communication?
Oh, yeah, I think compared to what I was practicing and seeing patients 10 years ago, I spent, it was much easier. We spent more time with our patients during the communication. So if you have two problems, they'll say, hey, let me talk about this one problem, but I got to schedule you again for the second problem because I can't get reimbursed if I'm talking to you about two problems. Mm. And this is just a survival mode, you know, for some hospitals in terms of how they're trying to look at that. But I think we need to revisit that balance between, yes, I need to be reimbursed for you, but am I really satisfying that balance if you are a patient that's complicated? You may be living in a food desert. Mm-hmm. So you're telling me I need to eat these particular products, but you don't have a clue. I'm at this location on Thursday for this food pantry. I'm on another location for another food pantry. These food pantries may not be alike. So I need to discuss those challenges with you, and you don't have time to discuss those challenges with me.
And we'll be back after a quick break. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Miriam Soap. We're talking today about what's behind Indiana's low ranking on pregnancy-related deaths and efforts to improve maternal and infant health in the state. If you have any questions or comments, you can find us on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana, or you can leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. We also have an app on your smartphone, anywhere you get your apps. It's called All In Vox Pop. Just search for it, and you can send us a question or comment through the app. With us, we have four guests: Rima Shahid, Executive Director of Women for Change; Velvet Miller, Project Director for Not One More, promoting maternal health and preventing maternal death; Vanessa Summers, Indiana State Representative for House District 99; and Dr. Virginia Kane, Director and Chief Medical Officer for the Marion County Public Health Department. Dr. Kane, before the break, we were just getting into the topic of the lack of resources for mothers who may live in food deserts. Can you tell us a little bit more about that and how healthcare professionals can keep these things in mind when they're talking with their patients?
I think the thing with some of the issues like food deserts, you know, if you're a low-income individual, you may not always have access to internet, and that may mean a computerized system. So how are you able to identify those places in a simple manner where those food pantries may reside? And all food pantries are not open 8 to 5 Monday through Friday or on the weekends. A lot of times they may be open on multiple days and at certain hours, and you're only limited about how much you can take from that food pantry. So it requires that mom to go to multiple food pantries, different hours. I got to figure out my transportation, how to get there if I'm on the public transit system. And that can be time consuming. And heaven forbid, if I have some young children that I have to carry with me because I don't have daycare support related to that, and I can only carry so many groceries in my lap or in a bag from shopping. So we have so many complexities with our patients. And so when I'm seeing my provider providing me OBGYN care, and they don't have a clue what my life is like and my lifestyle, so they may be paternalistic. Now, you know you've got to do better in eating these things, or if you've got diabetes or controlling these things. And they're being paternalistic, but they're also being judgmental when they're communicating with the client. So I've got a provider who doesn't even understand me and doesn't have a clue. So what's my likelihood I'm going to continue to listen for what advice that they're going to tell me? And I don't need to come to a visit for someone to be judgmental with me and don't even have a clue what my lifestyle is. So we have a huge amount of education that not only does the patient need, but the provider needs as well in order to have a good health outcome.
Right. And it goes back to that cultural competency that seems to be lacking.
I may be culturally aware, but that's not, in this day and age, that's not sufficient enough. Mm-hmm. We have to do better. We have to be culturally competent.
And Velvet, I want to know what your thoughts are about when it comes to Indiana. You know, how does our state compare to other states on issues like maternal health? What have you seen?
First, maternal mortality is often used as an indicator of the overall health population. So we start there. We know that the United States ranks behind 49 other developed countries in terms of maternal mortality. And it has increased significantly since 2000. And in the United States, Indiana ranks 46th in terms of highest maternal mortality. What happens often, and both Representative Summers and Rima and Dr. Kane have indicated, is that while a lot of effort has been focused on infant mortality for many, many years, after that baby's out of the womb and people concentrated on the infant's health, and we've seen a significant decline in infant mortality, moms have been forgotten or not listened to or not attended. And in Indiana, we know that not only do we have food deserts, we have OBGYN deserts, where most of our counties do not have access to OBGYNs, and that's physicians. Most also do not have access to other maternal care providers. So the idea of our need to get more providers in the communities where there is need, more providers not only with cultural competency, but look like, talk like, understand the population they are serving, and just increasing the number of OBGYN providers overall. What we know is that we are 3 to 4 times worse having OBGYN professionals, in particular physicians, in our country available to us. So in Indiana, what we know is that it took Representative Summers, Representative Shackelford, Senator Breaux, and others years to make something positive happen in terms of maternal mortality. Years. I'm referencing it in particular to the inaction of our legislature on this issue. So one of the things all of us are hoping to do is increase awareness of the problem throughout the city, throughout the state. Make sure we let our legislators know there are things that can be done, not just pass the legislation, but also put funding to it. For instance, Senator Breaux was successful in getting doulas acknowledged as a provider during pregnancy, only to learn that that's good, it was passed, but there's no money attached to it. That has been addressed, and it takes a lot of energy and a lot of work on parts of people like Rima and our legislators I just mentioned to make that difference. It takes lots of energy. Mm-hmm. And I'm sorry if am I running over my time?
No, not at all. No. I'm fascinated by the topic just to see that, you know, we all often look at the U.S. as this developed country, and we rank far behind some of the underdeveloped countries when it comes to maternal health, if I'm not mistaken.
Correct.
And so, Vanessa, I'm curious, you know, as a lawmaker, Have you seen any state policies that have had a positive effect on maternal health? I know Velvet mentioned this doula attachment that was put out, but is there anything else that has kind of...
No, we have a long way to go in Indiana. We're in a good start with the doula system and trying to bring that to areas in Indiana. It's just an exceptional situation to have someone that helps take care of you up until your pregnancy, up and through your pregnancy, and then a year afterwards, that helps you and the child. And we are going to have to start doing things that are out of the box. I always talk about centering, which is when you have a like amount of pregnant women that are going to deliver around the same time. Well, then they have their appointments at the same time, and they have group, and they do things together, and they learn to depend on each other. And that's just another layer of help. Plus they have doulas in, and they're just supported. It's just we are going to have to come up with different ways. The insurance companies are the ones that are controlling because of the time that you can spend with a patient. And I just think that we've got to figure out how to get that, wrangle that back out of their hands.
Right. Well, Velvet, you have a solution there?
I'm sorry. I just want to jump in, Vanessa, and support that. The other thing that I just learned, or maybe relearned, is that insurance companies consider a past pregnancy as a pre-existing condition and may choose to not insure you. So it's the insurance companies also that need our attention.
Mm-hmm. And Vanessa, is there any work being done on the state level with insurance companies at all?
No, but what you have to do now is you have to start, find out, you know, what's going on, and then approach them that maybe by maybe not even 2022, but the long session, that next long session, be able to address. Because what I found out is that you have to first know what's going on. Then you have to see if there's a way to educate them, or if there's any wiggle room in how they want to do things. And you can't bring them on as an adversary. You got to bring them on to say this, we're trying to help women, you know. So it takes a lot of work. That the light bulb just went off because I've been so focused on the mother and getting her information that I need to go start this conversation with the insurers to see what is going on and how they feel about it. Ask them for a meeting and let's talk about it. Mm-hmm. And then have, you know, but first have my ducks in a row about what I want to say. So I think maybe that's something, Dr. Miller, we probably going to have to talk about.
Well,
we probably going to have to make that happen. That sounds so good. The insurers, we've been so focused on the mother, trying to keep her alive, that is now it is time to go to the insurers.
Well, we'll definitely have to keep an eye on what you all plan and what happens. Rima, what are some specific policies that your group has pushed for that has been helpful for maternal health?
Well, I think as Representative Summers and Dr. Kane and Dr. Miller talked about, we really have to look at each one of these issues from a very intersectional point of view. All of these things together is what's causing our problem that we have here. So when we talk about these unprecedented times that we're in right now with the pandemic and with so many women leaving the workplace, the last time this many women left the workplace was during the last pandemic 100 years ago. Yet in 2020, we lack paid family leave and reasonable pregnancy accommodations. Governor Holcomb talked about the fact that majority of Indiana women make up the workforce, yet we don't have laws and policies in practice on the books to make sure that these women stay in the workplace. They're being forced out. And so when we think about women going to their doctors, we have to think about the fact that, are they going to have to choose between keeping their job or going to their appointment while they're pregnant? Or maybe having, because there are no reasonable, affordable childcare options in the state of Indiana. And so it's really important, and I implore people to look at it from multiple different points of view. We really have to meet people where they are during these difficult times. And I would go as far as to say, as during these unprecedented times, we have to take bold steps to make sure that we are protecting Indiana women, Indiana families. It was a few weeks ago that we celebrated Mother's Day. And so I would honestly say, stop buying those Hallmark cards if you're not ready to support legislation that support those mothers. Those Hallmark cards mean nothing. They can go right back into the recycling bin. Please make sure to recycle and stay green. But they can go right back in that bin if you are not prepared to have honest conversations, because this is not a rural problem. This is not an urban problem, but this is an Indiana problem. When it comes to information and disseminating information, yes, a third of Marion County residents may not have access to internet, but those statistics hold true for our Indiana residents in rural counties. Yes, folks in Marion County may have a problem getting nutritional food, but that stays true for our rural Indiana residents as well. And so we cannot let these districts divide us and make these assumptions on people based on their race, based on their zip code, based on where they live. Rather, we have to understand the specific problem of people and tackle it one by one and look at it from different points of view. Economics have a big part of this. Affordable childcare options have a big part of this. The fact that we have to increase public funding when it comes to healthcare has a huge part of this. And so if we really want to talk about Indiana families and a state that cares about moms and babies, let's look at the actual laws and who's actually not supporting these laws, because it might be eye-opening for folks.
Mm-hmm. Well, would you say that state law is anti-women in general?
I would say that we have to take bold steps. I have to say that we can't be disingenuous when it comes to it. You can't just have a month where you call it Women's Month and not really care about women the rest of the 11 months. You can't have a month where you uphold and uplift a certain group of people, but forget about them for the rest of the year. That has to be a continuum. You have to include the groups of people that you are advocating for and legislating for at the table and making those decisions. I remember standing outside the State House a few years ago and Senator Taylor walking off and saying, "I can't make this decision. I don't have a uterus." And I really applauded Senator Taylor, because we have to make sure that the groups of people that we're legislating for are at the table when we make those decisions, because there is a difference between allies and actual community members.
Mm-hmm. And as we get ready to wrap up here, Rima, is there anything that you've seen or heard at the State House that could possibly explain why there's a pushback against policies that could help maternal health?
Well, I would just point to the makeup of our State House. Indiana women make up 51% of the State House, yet we represent about 21% of the State House. Until and unless we have more women at the table that can advocate and legislate on behalf of women, we're really not going to be able to push the needle forward. I'm grateful for Representative Summers, Representative Shackelford, and a number of other women legislators, but they can't carry this heavy burden on their own. We need more women in those places of position and power to make these decisions on behalf of women.
And what is sort of the maybe, I don't want to say necessarily the solution, but what is something that can be done in the now in between trying to get more women involved in politics?
There are plenty of nonprofit organizations. There are plenty of organizations that are doing the work. Please get involved. I remember during our event last week, Representative Summers time and time again talked about the fact that we have to invest money into these organizations that are supporting Hoosier women. And we're not seeing that at a time right now when we're really, as a nation, looking at issues from a racial and gender point of view. Think about your own pocketbook and who you're supporting and what issues they're really bringing to the forefront, because as all of our panelists talked about, awareness is key. awareness is a crucial part of moving this conversation forward, and we really have to look at supporting organizations and individuals.
All right, well, we'll be back after a quick break. We're talking with a group of health experts and advocates about maternal health in Indiana and efforts to decrease the number of pregnancy-related deaths. If you have any questions or comments for the show, you can find us on Facebook or Twitter at All in Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. I'm Miriam Sobe. We'll be back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. We're discussing maternal health in Indiana with our four guests, Rima Shahid, Executive Director of Women for Change, Velvet Miller, Project Director for Not One More, Promoting Maternal Health and Preventing Maternal Death, Vanessa Summers, Indiana State Representative for House District 99, and Dr. Virginia Kane, Director and Chief Medical Officer for the Marion County Public Health Department. Dr. Kane, I want to talk a little bit about what the County Health Department is doing to help with some of these issues, and what are some of the efforts being made there?
So I think one of the key things that we have to look at is that we know that one third of these deaths occur during the pregnancy. One third of the deaths occur during the first week after delivery of the baby. And then one third of the deaths occur from 1 week to 1 year out. And so one of the issues we have is that we know that the causes of death are strokes and heart disease are like the primary causes, and then it's followed by infections and sometimes with postpartum depression, maybe even substance abuse issues and suicide. And so we try to identify, like, hypertension is really critical. It causes something called eclampsia, that the pressure gets so high you have a stroke. So we try to educate pregnant mothers about the warning signs. So if you're having these warning signs, this means it's something that you can't wait on. You need to talk to your provider urgently because something may be going on just before you have a stroke because your blood pressure is high. Or we can also have the luxury of sometimes having people buy their own portable hypertension equipment, you know, from the drugstores, and be able to take their own blood pressure to check whether their blood pressure is very high or not. So I think learning about the warning signs that can contribute to maybe even like postpartum hemorrhages, you know, hemorrhaging, you know, Judge Hatcher, I think most of you've heard of Judge Hatcher and her sister-in-law dying, and she died from postpartum hemorrhaging in the hospital. But what are those signs that may tip you off that something is not right with your pregnancy and you need to seek and get health care? We also work with the Patient Safety Coalition. This is a coalition that looks at different issues and try to address them from a hospital systems-wide process. And I know St. Francis Hospital and some others are looking at those particular things that they can do for pregnant mothers as they come and have a visit, you know, in their emergency rooms or their clinical visits. What should we be checking for those patients as they come to us? Because we know that 66% of all these maternal deaths are preventable. And we average almost 700 maternal deaths in the United States. So if you knock out almost 66%, that is huge that we can do to prevent it. But one of our other issues, and I was just listening to the legislators talking about some policies, we know that of pregnant mothers here in Indiana, about 56% of them are on Medicaid. And we know that once that baby is born, a lot of places 2 months later, your Medicaid coverage drops because you're no longer pregnant and it's 2 months after the, is that different, Vanessa? So tell me about it.
That, what I just said was that under the CARES Act with our President Biden, they are going to advance that to a year now of postpartum care. And I've had a conversation with FSSA to say, are you picking this up? Is there a delay in it? When there's no delay right now, a woman that is pregnant will be given a year postpartum care in Indiana.
So this that's where started. that's really critical to make sure that that stays in place, because I know that we're dropping unemployment benefits, I believe, as of June. So it's so nice to know that that insurance policy is going to stay in place for our Medicaid clients, because the deaths, one third of deaths, can occur from 1 week out to a year. But I only think that that's because of you guys' advocacy as legislators, emphasizing how important it is about maternal mortality. So keep up the good work.
Thank and, you know, I do want to touch a little bit upon the rates of pregnancy-related deaths. We hear that Black women nationally, 3 to 4 times more than white women to face pregnancy-related deaths. And Velvet, I mean, we mentioned that Indiana is sort of at the bottom of all the states here in these types of things like maternal health. What causes this issue here in Indiana?
Well, probably things that my panelist colleagues have mentioned. But one of the things, a couple things. We must acknowledge that there is something called implicit bias in our health system, if not outright racism. We need to acknowledge that people of color are under a different and more extensive stress level. And it affects women of color significantly when they're pregnant. So we know that. One of the things, I hope I'm answering you, one of the things that I was helpful in promoting in the training of residents for OBGYN, because those are our next wave of doctors out in the community. Well, traditionally what has happened is that they've had a lecture on being culturally competent. And what we've been able to push for the IU School of Medicine, and now fortunately, because I'm on a national committee for resident education, across the country, we've been saying include more information, training, discussion about managing your implicit bias, managing your assumptions and prejudgment, when you take care of patients. So I urge all schools of medicine, all schools of nursing, all schools of any healthcare providers to not just accept 1 hour of training, but it must be included in all of the courses, the experiences of the soon to be health professionals. In Indiana, again, we're facing not only professional limitations, we're facing an awful lot of access issues and the lack of access issues in our state. What we can do about that will require all of us. And I know Representative Summers was adamant about this. It will take all of us in the community, the docs, the nurses, the doulas, the advocates, the REMAs, all of us to address the multitude of challenges in reducing the maternal mortality rate in Indiana. What I believe is happening also with the help of the CRCF, and they have funded not one more, is that they are taking on a greater responsibility in addressing equity issues within Indianapolis and the larger community. So I applaud that, and I know that it's not enough. So ownership within the community of the issues, collaboration between all of the different organizations to say we can work together, not compete against each other, but work together to try to make a difference is necessary.
Hey, Marion, can I pipe in? Sorry, just been killing me. Okay.
No, for sure.
Yes.
So listen, it's the structural racism. Unless we address social determinants. So we look at the disparities in income. If I'm just making minimum wage, I may have to have 2 jobs in order to just survive. If I'm only making minimum wage that hasn't changed in 25 years, our housing, where do we live? What's the safety of that? I'm going to my housing, you know, is the crime rate higher or whatever, that stress related to that? my educational level may make a difference in terms of how I'm communicating with my provider, my understanding of what information is provided to me. And I think that there's so many other circumstances, this impacts me for poor health. If I'm poor, I can't buy the kind of foods I need. I may not be able to get to the transportation that I'm related to. But we do have the implicit biases with the providers, our situations. We know that if you're a Black woman, you got a college degree, you still have twice the maternal death rates compared to your white counterpart, even if your income is higher. So, hey, Serena Williams, right. She's worth over $200 million. They didn't believe her, okay? And from a communication standpoint. So I think we have to address social determinants if we're going to make a difference in these women. They need to be able to do one job, just 8 to 5, sufficient enough to put food on their table, provide transportation, help with childcare if they need it. That's the biggest fight I think you legislators should be working on, how to get us empowered ourselves, not spending our time trying to figure out different places to go to each day, trying to put food on our table.
And you're mentioning of Serena Williams. I was thinking about that with how that sort of brought to light this issue of racism within the healthcare system, and how Black women aren't believed when they bring up concerns or health concerns. And how prevalent is that in Indiana?
It's very prevalent. I just went through Dr. Bronson Tucker Edmonds does a PowerPoint on the misogyny that's against Black women. And she did it for one group that I was on was on with. And then I asked her to come and do it for the people that I work with, the Indiana Minority Health Coalition. We just got off of that talk, and my God, that she goes through the history of what happened to African American women and how we were experimented on and operated on with no painkillers to see how we worked and how women worked. And so it has just been, it's been a history of bad things in the health field happening to, you know, particularly African-American women since the beginning of time. So I don't know how, you know, it's got to be changed, and we've just got to keep talking about it. You know, right now we're at the point where nobody wants to really hear what we're saying. But if we're going to keep saying it, you know, we'll get louder and louder, because it is something that just has to stop.
Well, Vanessa, what would you say to folks who might say, well, this isn't a legislative issue that needs to be dealt with in legislation? This is a healthcare issue that needs to be turned around.
Because there is implicit bias in healthcare. Come up with some legislation that deals with implicit bias in healthcare. That's my part. That's what I do. And then I'm going to keep, I created a whole toolkit behind maternal health just for the legislators to know what was going on and compact in one area. You know, so I will keep doing things like that. It's so great to have MP and Masters in Public Health students that are willing to help you do anything, and they and come up with some of the best information. So I do believe as a legislator, even though that's public policy, I still have an obligation for education. Mm-hmm. I'm obligated to educate, as I am obligated to come up with some forms of legislation. As I educate myself, I want to be able to educate others.
And Rima, what are you thinking is sort of the next steps? You had this event, you discussed maternal health. What are the next steps as we move forward through the year?
As we gear up for the 2022 session, I think it's important for all of us to recognize that maternal health and infant health is not a political issue. that we shouldn't let parties divide us on this issue, that structurally we have created these inadequacies in medical health and access to health and education. And so we are all obligated to work together to make sure that we make a call, and a renowned call, to answer this problem. We cannot let these political divisions divide us on an issue that's so critical for our state. And yet, Vanessa Summers, Representative Vanessa Summers, will tell you and tell me and all of us that this is what happens, is that because of the letter that's next to your name, as far as the political affiliation that you have, you will not advance this issue. Let's put politics aside to make sure that we have healthy moms and healthy babies in the state of Indiana. And that's something that we can all do and work together on. Because what we see as advocates time and time again is folks wanting to come together to make a change, but they're unable to at the end of the day because of petty politics. Though that's not Hoosier values. That's not what Hoosiers stand for. And I just implore all of us to look beyond politics to make sure that we can take, again, those bold steps in these unprecedented times, because we shouldn't be on these lists for 7th worst in the nation as far as infant mortality and 3rd worst in the nation as far as maternal mortality, because each one of these statistics represents a person and the loss of life, and we cannot become desensitized to it.
Absolutely. And we have about 30 seconds left. Velvet, if there's anyone listening now who's looking for resources for maternal health, do you have any places they can go? We need you to unmute. There you go.
I did it again. Indiana Department, State Department of Health, Marion County Public Health Department. I trust our website at Not One More. And I'd like to make sure we understand and share with the audience, it's not just healthcare providers, it's not just the legislature, and all need to be included, or the advocates. It's the mom, it's the pop, it's the uncle, it's a cousin that can say, I'll take care of your kids while you go to the doctor, or here's some fresh veggies. This is all of us. It's going to take all of us.
All right. Well, thank you all so much for joining us today. Rima Shahid, Executive Director of Women for Change, Velvet Miller, Project Director for Not One More, Promoting Maternal Health and Preventing Maternal Death, Vanessa Summers, Indiana State Representative for House District 99, and Dr. Virginia Kane, Director and Chief Medical Officer for the Marion County Health Department. Our producers are Drew Dodlin and Micah Yason. Scott Cameron is our managing editor. Adam Gross is our engineer and composed our theme song. Find us on Twitter and Facebook at All in Indiana. I'm Miriam Soap. Thanks for listening. This is All In.